Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:34 p.m. on Tuesday, April 20th, 2021. Present today, we have Representative Thompson, Representative LeBon, Representative Edgman, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Merrick, Representative Rasmussen, Representative Josephson, Representative Johnson, myself, Co-Chair Foster, and just a reminder, folks could mute their cell phones, and we also have Representative Wool. And at today's meeting, we're going to be hearing HB 181, which is appropriations of the American Rescue Plan funds from the offices from the Office of the Governor. And presenting will be Neil Steininger, Director of OMB. I see we also have Paloma Harbor, Fiscal Management Specialist, also with OMB. And so with that, thank you both very much for coming and presenting the governor's bill. And if you could go ahead and put yourselves on the record and walk us through it.
Good afternoon. For the record, Neil Sanger, Director, Office of Management and Budget.
And for the record, Paloma Harbor, Fiscal Management Analyst with the Office of Management and Budget.
And before we dive into our presentation, I just wanted to kind of make one note as we go through this. There are items in our presentation, both the items that have been included in HB 181, as well as a handful of items where we didn't feel that we had enough information on the grant itself from the American Rescue Plan in order to include an appropriation bill at this time. And we've included those items in the presentation just to make it clear to both the committee and members of the public that, you know, we are aware that these grants are in the bill, and to lay out, you know, the reasons why we haven't put them forward yet. And as we get more information, we'll come back to the body with more information on those grants and, you know, whether or not the decision to include them has been made.
Okay, again, for the record, Paloma Harbor with the Office of Management and Budget. So included with the materials we sent to you for this presentation was a three-page handout with the header COVID-19 Response Funding. And it has additional information on a lot of these direct grants to agencies. So as I go through them, they're on this list. As the director mentioned, there are items on page 3 that we know about but are not included in the bill that we're also going to be covering in our presentation. So I just wanted to point you to that. Also, as the director mentioned, I already said that. Okay. So included in the budget for the Department of Education and Early Development from the American Rescue Plan, or ARP, was Institute of Museum and Library Service funds of $2.2 million, National Endowment for the Arts funding of $758,700, and then not included yet, but pending more information may be added, for the Department of Education and Early Development, Emergency Education Relief Funds. We are awaiting additional guidance on state maintenance of effort requirements for that funding. We did receive them just yesterday from the U.S. Department of Education, and there is a call that they're having with states on Thursday and Friday this week to discuss that guidance in further details. So we will hopefully have more information shortly.
I'd also like to mention Representative Carpenter has also joined us, and please continue.
Okay, thank you. Also not yet included for the Department of Education is funding in the American Rescue Plan for the Nile Child Nutrition Program to allow that program to run through the summer. Again, we are awaiting further funding and program information. Also not yet included in the bill for the Department of Environmental Conservation is a brand new program that was established in the American Rescue Plan called the Low Income Household Water Assistance Program. And that program is still being developed by the feds, so we just didn't have enough information to include it at this time. Now, included in the bill for the Department of Health and Social Services is funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, for both COVID testing at $22 million and COVID vaccinations at $32.4 million. From the Administration for Children and Families, there is pandemic emergency assistance of $3.4 million to provide short-term non-recurring support to impacted families. And for the Women, Infant, and Children program, there is some benefit improvement funds of $1.2 million.
And Ms. Harbor, so on the items that are included in the bill, are those all items that are considered very restricted, limited? We know that these are places where they have to go. It's pretty much unquestioned, and there's not a lot of discretion in where those funds can go.
Chair Foster, that's correct.
Thank you. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry if I missed this in the beginning. And are we talking about with direct grants? This is money has to go through the state appropriation system and not directly from the federal government to Department of Education or something like that.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, that's perfectly correct. This is direct to a state agency for a specific program. So as the chair mentioned, it has specific criteria. It's not necessarily discretionary where it goes to in the state, but it is through a state agency. It does not include, and I meant to mention this, so thank you, it does not include funding directly to businesses, individuals, or tribal governments that do not have to go through the state. So our presentation does not cover those funding sources, and neither does the bill.
Representative Wolf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and thanks for indulging me. So just a quick follow-up to that. The monies we're talking about for this direct grant is the approximately $1 billion in total that the state has, that goes through the state as opposed to goes directly to other agencies from the federal government.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, no. The $1 billion is the last slide of our presentation, and we are not calling that direct agency grants because it is more discretionary in where it goes. Does that? So this is grants above and beyond that $1 billion.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Okay.
Oh, actually, I'm sorry. We've got a question, Representative Ortiz.
For COVID testing. My question for you is, because it goes directly to Health and Human Services, would that money be usable for, let's say, the governor just recently announced vaccinations for potential visitors coming to the state of Alaska, free vaccinations. One of the things that I heard from my own community was, that's really good, that's great, but what about funding for testing? Could the $22 million be distributed to community airports, et cetera, to fund testing of visiting visitors to the state to provide free testing, COVID testing, as opposed to vaccinations?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, a number of these programs have very specific requirements, and it'd probably be better to have the agencies that'll be administering the programs answer some of the detailed questions. I do know, because I was recently reading about this funding, that this testing, the majority of it is specific to education testing to help schools reopen. Okay. The large majority of the funding is for that. There is some funding for underprivileged individual testing, so programs like that. So I would have to look into whether or not it could be used at airports.
Please proceed.
I did want to mention, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention, also not included in the bill right now is anything that we've already submitted a budget amendment for, specifically the housing programs. So we submitted amendments for the housing programs that were in the American Rescue Plan previously, so we didn't include them in this bill. Okay.
Yeah. Representative Josephson.
So through the chair, Ms. Harbert, you said you submitted housing amendments. To which instrument?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, to the operating and capital budgets, we submitted amendments for the Housing Emergency Rental Assistance Program to AHFC and a mortgage assistance program and a home choice vouchers program. There's, I think, four or five different amendments.
Follow. But I thought you said you submitted that somehow through the American Rescue Plan.
Oh.
You may not have.
through the chair, Representative Josephson, I meant that there were some American Rescue Plan items for those programs that were submitted as amendments previously, so we did not include them in this bill.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Also for the Department of Health and Social Services included in the bill is Child Care Development Fund grants of $28.4 million, Child Care Stabilization grants at $45.5 million. These are estimates, I should specify. Child Abuse Prevention funding of $291,000, Mental Health Block Grant funding of $3 million, Substance Abuse Block Grant funding at $4.7 million, Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program funding of $23.7 million, various grants under the Older Americans and Their Families funding totaling $7 million, and Pandemic EBT Administrative Grant funding of $768,400.
Do you know what EBT stands for?
Electronic Bank Transfer, I think, or something. It's technical.
Representative LeBond?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess looking at these direct grants, health and social services, what's the formula within these dollar amounts under these 7, 8, 9 programs? Is that, how's that community or population driven to spend this money within the state?
Through the chair, Representative LeBond, the act has various, depending on the program, it has very specific stipulations. Like I mentioned, the vaccine funding was split. They wanted some of it to go directly towards education funding. They wanted others to go to underprivileged individuals. So the act specifies some things, and then the federal agency that administers the program has further allocations.
Yes, and if I could follow up on that, Mr. Chairman, I guess what caught my eye is the Child Care Development Fund grant. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking Fairbanks and many communities have a robust child care program, if you will, variety of private and public mm-hmm. organizations that provide child care services. Do you have an idea, and maybe this isn't a fair question, but it's called a development fund grant. How is that money going to be spent and used, and how does it benefit a child care operator right now doing business?
Through the chair, Representative LeBond, as I mentioned, when you want to talk details on a specific program, it'd probably be best to get the agency that's going to administer that grant to present that information. I'm not certain on what formula will be used to distribute this funding.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a fair answer, and I guess the details and how this money gets spent, the guidance has been received yet and just not part of this presentation. So HESS has this guidance and is figuring this answer out as we speak.
Through the chair, Representative LeBond, they've received various levels of guidance on these various programs. They know for a fact there's no significant match requirement tied to this, so we put it in the bill. They don't necessarily, I don't know if they have all the program details yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative LeBond or Carpenter?
Mr. Chairman, I think your EBT question is food stamps, electronic mm-hmm. benefit transfer. But I could be wrong. I think that's what it means.
Benefit transfer. Thank you.
There you go.
In regards to the school lunch program.
Thank you. See no further questions? Ms. Harburg?
Okay. So not included in the bill are some pending items for the Department of Social Services, including child care assistance funding, where we're awaiting some additional guidance on state match requirements, and home and community-based services enhanced federal participation. Again, we're awaiting additional state match requirement guidance. And then the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program administrative grant increase, we are awaiting funding and program information.
Ms. Harbor, in terms of the way the bill is written, mm-hmm. are these mentioned in the bill and it says like to be determined later, or are you just including that on your slide but it's not referenced at all in the bill? You're just letting us know these are other things that you're looking at?
Chair Foster, that's correct. They're not included in the bill at this time. We are just wanting to make sure you and the public are aware of these items.
Okay, thank you. Please proceed.
Okay, got it. All right. Included in the bill for the Department of Education, I mean, Department of Labor and Workforce Development, is some higher education emergency relief funds to the Alaska Vocational Technical Center of $441,000. Half of that funding will have to go to students as grants. And then a capital project for the unemployment insurance system modernization funding for to modernize their systems at $6 million. For the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, there is an emergency management performance grant for $882,300. And for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, included in the bill is some Federal Transit Administration grants totaling $6.6 million. We did not include at this point, because we do not have dollar amounts, funding they're anticipating to receive from the Federal Aviation Administration for airport rescue grants. Included in the bill for the University of Alaska is higher education emergency relief funds of $30.8 million. Again, half of that funding must go to students as grants.
And maybe if I could, Kim, if you wouldn't mind, this presentation is perfect for now, but I just thought maybe members might want to have a copy of the bill, if we could get a copy to each member, just so they can reference. But this is absolutely fine for now. I'm just thinking for folks who might want to look through it as we're going through this. So please continue. I don't think, we have a question on the slide, Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. A couple questions on the higher education funds. I remember last committee that you were here, I asked the break between students and non-students, or between the institution and the students. And I said, well, at the time, students were forced to leave, and they got reimbursed for housing or tuition and the, you know, sort of inconvenience of closing school early. But going forward, my question was the half going to students. But then it occurred to me that it perhaps was for tuition. Going forward, students could get a break on tuition via these grants. Is that possible? Is that the intent? I'm just wondering how you give money to students whose semester wasn't necessarily disrupted.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, it can go to defray student costs, whether that's costs that they're incurring because they're having to attend via distance learning, or costs they're incurring, you know, for technology upgrades to allow them to do more distance learning, or potentially tuition costs. I'm not certain how the university will grant this out to students. But it can go to defray their costs.
Okay. Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And the maintenance of effort, I know that's come up in the past. They're getting $30 million in this bill. Mm-hmm. Are we assuming the variance or the exemption is going to be granted, or do you have any more knowledge on the maintenance of effort?
So through the chair, Representative Wool, to clarify, the higher education emergency relief funds do not require a state maintenance of effort. It's the education funds that were referenced earlier in the presentation that we did not include in the bill yet, because we are still waiting for additional information on that maintenance of effort requirement.
Thank you.
Representative LeBond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, at the risk of asking an unfair question, but at the top of the page, under the Unemployment Insurance System Modernization Funds, so do we have a need to modernize our unemployment insurance system, or is this money allocated and you use it for that purpose? If you don't use it for that purpose, then it defaults back to the federal government, and it can only be used for that purpose. And if we don't have a need, do we use it for that purpose anyway?
Through the chair, Representative LeBond, I didn't bring the capital write-up on this project with me, and I meant to. It is definitely a need in our state. Our system is old, and it would help us with transparency and for detecting fraud and other things if our system was enhanced. This will be a competitive award with the U.S. Department of Labor for this specific purpose, and so if we get a grant, it will have to be used for that purpose. If we don't get a grant, you know, we don't get a grant.
Thank you.
Okay, please proceed.
Okay. Okay, so two more items in the bill referenced on our direct grants page are actually tied to the coronavirus state and local fiscal relief fund. They are set asides from that fund in the bill. The first is for capital projects funding of $112.3 million. This is a placeholder appropriation at this time. All we know definitively is the language from the bill that said this was it's allowable to carry out critical capital projects directly enabling work, education, and health monitoring, including remote options in response to the public health emergency. Initial calls with Treasury indicate that they are interpreting this language to only apply to broadband projects. So we've just recently been hearing that. We don't have final guidance yet. We are anticipating final guidance by May 10th.
Representative Johnson?
Can you just repeat what you just said about broadband? Because I had thought when I read the original act that it was a water and sewer and so on.
So we'll talk further about the rest of the coronavirus state and local fiscal relief funds, the $1 billion. That's on our last slide. One of the uses of that is water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure projects. This is a separate allocation in the American Rescue Plan specific for capital project funding to carry out critical capital projects directly enabling work, education, and health monitoring, including remote options. And so that's where Treasury has at least initially indicated that they are interpreting that to mean broadband.
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just for further clarification then, would that include telehealth provisions as well?
Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, I don't know at this point.
Thank you.
And just to be clear, on this $112 million, I thought that that was the money that we all had thought previously it was for water, sewer, and broadband. But it sounds like what you're saying, that this is totally separate from that.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the same thing. I assumed it was the same thing, in which case, okay, you can't use it for water and sewer, but this is not that. There's a total separate bucket that applies to water, sewer, and broadband.
That's correct.
This amount is all for broadband.
Okay. Chair Foster, yes, that's correct. There is the $1 billion. This $1 billion state funding, discretionary funding, that can be used for water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. This was a separate set aside that we thought could be used for more than just broadband, but again, as they're initially indicating, that's going to be their interpretation.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. Okay. Please continue.
Okay, one more set aside in the coronavirus state and local fiscal relief fund. Section of the bill is funding to non-entitlement local governments and counties that'll have to pass through the state to those local communities. They will be passed through as grants based on the allocation methodology in the act and clarified by Treasury.
Representative Ortiz.
Can you define the phrase in is there non-entitlement local governments and counties? What does that mean?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the act very specifically ties the definition to a federal program. For the most part, counties are the same as our boroughs, and non-entitlement local governments are not boroughs. They're cities and or not organized communities. Does that make sense?
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just for clarification,
mm-hmm.
that funding is directly to non-organized communities in Alaska, and is there additional funding that goes directly to organized munis and boroughs, I'm assuming?
So let me clarify, unless you have it.
I wonder if non-entitlement local governments and counties, would that be like the villages?
So Chair Foster and other members, it's mostly cities, so Adak City, Akiak City. So the U.S. Senate did provide an initial allocation. Again, this allocation will get refined by Treasury before we get the funding, but it looks like it's primarily cities in the non-entitlement allocation. And then, as I mentioned, the county allocation is really our boroughs, Aleutians East Borough. And I'm sorry, we did provide this at the last time we presented ARP, but I didn't bring it today as a handout.
I wonder if, would Kim, would she be able to make a copy of that for everyone?
Absolutely.
Were there any other questions on this? Okay, Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm assuming this is more of a per capita population-based calculation. And I remember seeing that handout from before.
Mm-hmm.
So the cities, and there's another section for boroughs, as you mentioned. Is this in your, did you put it in your bill?
No.
This is not in the bill. This is not the direct.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Wool, not included in the bill is any funding that'll go directly to a community from the feds, including the municipality of Anchorage's allocation that's gonna go directly to them from Treasury. So that's not included in the bill. This is for those communities that will receive their funding through the state.
Follow.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I'm sorry for, there's a lot of revenue streams here that I'm trying to keep straight. And I know we've had presentations where you'll go down a list of, and if possible, maybe, I don't know, if there can be some kind of flow chart that, like a one-sheeter, I can look, oh, that funds go here, and this goes through the state, and this goes direct or something, I don't know. But it would be somewhat clarifying because we go from page to page with different funds,
yep.
And some go through legislation and some don't. So, thank you.
Okay, seeing no Representative Josephson.
Yes, the age-old question through the chair, Ms. Harbor, is the nexus to COVID, and perhaps it varies depending on the item. Do you know anything more about that? So, for example, on the slide we're on, community pass-through dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I assume that's not like community assistance, which is unencumbered and can be used liberally by a community for its own purpose.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, you're correct. There are stipulations in the act on how this funding can be spent, very similar to the state, which we're just about to go over.
Please continue.
And so moving to this slide, we're starting to transition into the more discretionary funding. And to Representative Josephson's question, the discussion of that pass-through to communities is subject to these stipulations from the American Rescue Plan, but is, you know, within that more discretionary funding that the communities have discretion to use for COVID-related items. So just as, you know, a point of reminder, you know, we've been over this in a prior presentation, but these are the four guidelines and two restrictions from the Act outline the use of this community, state, and local fiscal relief fund, the roughly $1 billion coming through the state of Alaska. So the first is to respond to the public health emergency with respect to the coronavirus disease or its negative economic impacts. This includes items benefiting households or businesses that were impacted. B is to respond to workers performing essential work during the public health emergency through premium pay. C is the provision of government services, and that's limited to the reduction in revenue due to COVID-19. So for the state of Alaska, that's a comparison to revenues from fiscal year 2019. And D is to make the necessary investments in water, sewer, or broadband infrastructure. So this is that infrastructure mentioned in the Act that's separate from that $112 million capital project grant. But there are two restrictions that were detailed in the Act. One is that there may be no direct or indirect offsets to a reduction in tax revenue that's a result from a change in law, regulation, or policy. So basically that means that under that revenue offset, the reduction in revenue, it can't be a reduction in revenue due to a policy decision made by the state. And B it prohibits any deposits into a pension fund. So we can't take this $1 billion and just simply deposit into the PERS or TERS funds. So these are the basic restrictions. And one thing to note, you know, when we looked at that capital project description of what those capital projects were allowable for, and that interpretation by the Treasury to mean narrowly focused on broadband, which is a little bit different than we had initially read that. That's something to keep in mind, that when we try to interpret these four guidelines right now, you know, we will be subject to how the Treasury reads these guidelines. And that was kind of a good lesson in they may read things a little bit differently than we do.
Representative Rasmussen and then Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shaniger, do you think that the essential workers would the Treasury consider retail employees and people who are kind of working in that capacity at a grocery store, for example, or food service, an essential worker?
Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, I would personally, you know, that would be the way that I would interpret that. I don't know that that's the way the Treasury will. We have asked that question. That was included in the list of questions sent by NGA, and I believe it was included in several other organizations that sent questions, is a better definition of essential worker and what that means and what types of workers that apply to. But, you know, my sort of initial read would be, you know, workers that, you know, were required to work as a result of being deemed essential by either their employee or the state. But, you know, that's to say that's, you know, speculation at this point as to what that guidance will come in as.
And just a quick follow-up.
Follow-up.
It would be helpful to kind of better understand, I guess, as you have been digging to find the definition of an eligible essential worker. One thing that I think has been an unintended consequence of how government has responded to the pandemic is some workers now don't have the same incentive to go work in some of these positions, like retail at a grocery store, for example, because of the amount of unemployment benefit that they're receiving. So giving kind of a bonus or premium pay, basically, or grant to companies who are trying to bring in those workers everybody needs to be able to go to the grocery store. It seems like would be something that could kind of help us offset that unintended consequence. So hopefully when you get the guidance, we'll be able to learn more about that. Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just to follow up on that, Mr. Steininger, I don't know if it was in House Bill 76 or where, but in the Capitol there's been some debate about who's an essential worker. If we were to pay premium pay, we would have to follow the federal guideline as to who an essential worker is, or we would violate the guideline. In other words, if we're going to play ball and participate in subsection B, we have to do it the federal way, or we don't qualify, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes. If we're going down, you know, in anything that we use the ARP funds for, we need to, you know, follow the federal guidelines and follow the federal rules.
If I may, again, Paloma Harbor, just to clarify, we can be more restrictive than the federal guidelines. We cannot be more broad than the federal guidelines. So if they defined essential workers to be very broad and we wanted to focus on real retail workers, we could narrow, we just couldn't broaden.
Representative Johnson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just noticed a couple missing pages. I think they're going to get it recopied, though. Thanks.
Okay. And Representative Carpenter?
I just want to verify that the handout that was handed out is the local pass-through funding. That's what we're looking at, right?
Correct.
And regarding the pass-through funding, that is outside of the billion. Is that correct, or because that's going straight to the municipalities? I mean, it's a pass-through, but it's not part of any discretion that we have in that spending. So that's outside of the $1 billion that we commonly. Okay, thank you, Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The premium pay component, I'm assuming that's a sort of a block grant or a chunk of money going to an entity that then people apply for it. In other words, because the definition of essential worker is probably going to be fairly broad, not just healthcare, but, you know, grocery stores, plumbers, utility workers, a lot of people are essential because without them we'd have a hard time functioning. So I imagine there's going to be a lot of demand for it. Is that a situation where different groups, entities apply and state their case and get as much as they can? And I know it's capped at a certain amount per hour, per year, et cetera, so it's not unlimited. But teachers comes to mind as well as essential workers that probably underwent some stress this last year. I'm just wondering how, once that allocation is made, how does the distribution work?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, I think if, you know, if the state chooses to go down the road of setting up some kind of essential worker premium pay concept, we would have to determine that through setting up that program. You know, it would probably be dependent upon how we structured or organized that program, how it would work.
Okay, please continue.
So this slide is laying out the broad categories that we've set in the bill before you. So these categories are all laid out in section one of the bill that we sent. Just for a little bit on the actual structure and drafting of the bill, section one covers really the discretionary funding coming to the state. And sections 2 through 8 really are covering those direct grants that Ms. Harbor went over. But you know, one thing to note on these categories and the dollar values that you're looking at here is these aren't set in stone. Really, we set and put these out here as a starting point to decide and determine how to best distribute this greater than $1 billion in funding coming to the state. And we looked at different areas and different categories of impact to the state that we think that this money could go to, you know, supporting and bringing the state out of the economic impacts of COVID-19. So to that end, we looked at, you know, 5 distinct categories, the first one being protecting Alaskans, which really is centered around, you know, individual security, food security, health response, you know, future health response that is not covered by some of those direct grants to health and social services. So that's kind of important to note when you look at that dollar value, is it is also bolstered by direct grants for health response. But also including some of the other impacts is one area where we actually did include a specific item we would like to see funded with ARP dollars, and that is $6 million for sexual assault and domestic violence organizations to help respond to the impacts of COVID and the lockdowns in the stay at homes that have resulted in, you know, in rise in those types of cases that they deal with. The next section would be Alaska tourism revitalization. This we've put a dollar value of $150 million, and it's really to support programs designed to help both impacted tourism businesses, market Alaska tourism, try to rebuild that industry that has been hit so hard over the last year. But we also have a more general economic recovery and innovation section that we're looking at ideas around the idea of doing relief to businesses and organizations, but also investment in future economy and rebuilding out of this, you know, economic downturn we've seen through COVID. And the Build Alaska Infrastructure Investment section, that's really focused on that Part D of the guidance, the infrastructure investment, primarily water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure investments. But based on the guidance we get back from the feds, we may be able to do other types of infrastructure investment as well. And the final category is general fund offset. So this, under this concept, what we're looking to do is follow that section C from the bill where we can fund general government services to the extent of our revenue loss. And so this would allow us to effectively take this ARP money and put it in the bank to compensate the state for lost revenue we sustained since the COVID-19 pandemic has hit. This, our initial estimates based on the guidance we have so far, indicate we could utilize the full $1 billion for general fund offset. This, you know, might get refined a little bit as we get more guidance and may not be something that can be done all in 1 year. But we have been looking to understand how much general fund could be offset with this money. The other thing to consider, if there are, you know, ideas for use of this money that may not fit that guidance perfectly, you know, there is the option to offset general fund costs in one place in order to execute on a program that, you know, may or may not perfectly fit the federal guidance, but may be better for Alaska's economy and the response that we need in our state.
A question, Representative Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Seiniger, if this money comes in two tranches, for example, $500 million and $500 million, is it going to be up to the legislature to divvy that up between these different programs, or does it have to be 50-50 each?
Chair Merrick, so that would be something, if that is how that money comes in, you know, that really is one of the, actually, to kind of step back, actually, that is one of the bigger sort of policy questions that, you know, we as a group, both the legislature and executive branch, kind of need to work through. Is it better to appropriate all this money up front for specific purposes, or appropriate some now and some later when we might have more information and better guidance and a better idea of where these programs are being impactful? And as I said earlier, these dollar values here in these categories are not set in stone. So if we are in a situation where, you know, half the money is coming this year, half is coming next year, you know, we would probably want to focus that first tranche of money on those things that are best to set up now, whether it's, you know, workforce development type ideas or things that, you know, are good to start now and prepare us for, you know, a possible infrastructure plan from the feds in the future to get, you know, our workforce ready for something like that to come in later. So not every one of these categories would be a clean split 50-50. It would really depend upon the program inside.
Yeah. Follow up?
And can you speak to the general fund offset and why it would be beneficial to do it in the first tranche as opposed to the second?
Mm-hmm. So Chair Merrick, the general fund offset, the reason that it's a good idea to consider the general fund offset now is we're seeing our future revenue projections are higher than they are today. And our understanding now of the federal guidance is that it's a comparison between current year revenue and revenue in fiscal year 19. And so current year revenue for fiscal year 21 is estimated to be, I believe, about $750 million lower than our revenue was in fiscal year 19. However, going forward a year, it's only about $460 million lower. So that amount of general fund offset that we can accomplish appears that it would be shrinking. However, that is one outstanding question to the Treasury, is if we're allowed to count the revenue loss from fiscal year 20 towards this concept of general fund offset. And if we are allowed to do that, that was greater than $860 million in revenue lost just in fiscal year 20 alone. But that said, with this uncertainty, it's a good idea to kind of focus that general fund offset in the early stages before revenue rises again.
Thank you.
And speaking to Representative Merrick's question on the splitting of the money, you can do it either in two tranches. We can elect to do that. It's possible that the federal government mandates that. And so you would split it over FY21/22 and then FY23 as an option, just one scenario. As I understand it, the governor's bill doesn't do that. What the governor's bill is, it appropriates the full $1 billion, but you do a multi-year appropriation over 3 years, FY21, 22, 23, 24, so actually four fiscal years. Is that correct, and can you speak to that?
Chair Foster, that's correct. The way that we structured the bill, more for the sake of simplicity than anything else, and not kind of predetermining an outcome of what, you know, what the ultimate decision is through a multi-year appropriation of the full amount. That would allow us, if the revenue comes in from the feds at a later date within that appropriation, it would still, you know, function. But as you note, it may be mandated by the federal government that it come in two pots. And so we should be prepared for that possibility that we may have to treat this in two pots of money.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen, did you have a question? Okay. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The general fund offset up to $1,000,000.019, which is the total amount of the grant. So you're saying we could offset this whole thing. Is that primarily based on the oil revenue reduction over 2019 and perhaps 2020 that totals, by your estimation, a little over $1 billion as well, like 700 and 400, I think, is the numbers you just said. Is that really what, because we had a high oil revenue year and then 19 and 2021, we had low oil revenue, which whether there's a cause and effect with COVID, we're using it, that reduction, to say, hey, we lost money. We can use this federal money to replace it. So is that how you're coming up with the billion as general fund offset, and then you're only choosing $139 million just on a policy call?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, roughly speaking, yes. So our understanding of that revenue comparison based on our read of the guidance indicates we would be able to justify revenue loss well in excess of the $1 billion in order to, you know, compensate and do that general fund offset. We've also looked at the state's operating budget for where we would actually, you know, take government services and offset them with ARP dollars. And we've identified about $2.5 billion worth of annual expenditures that we think, you know, could be offset without jeopardizing match requirements in federal programs, because generally speaking, you can't use federal money to match federal money, so we want to care for that. But there's about $2.5 billion in general government expenditures that we believe could be used to offset, and well over $1 billion in revenue loss that we think we can justify, justify that offset. That's why we say it could be up to the whole amount. Regarding the $139 million, really that is, you know, just, it's obviously the remainder of, you know, when you add up the other pots of money. And that's one of the other key decisions that is, that we have to contend with here in this process, is that balance between some of these programs to help, you know, build Alaska's economy back out of the COVID impacts versus, you know, helping to offset some of those, you know, general fund losses that we've sustained. And that balance and that kind of tension between those two needs is one of the key decisions that we have to make.
And just to add to the revenue loss, you've got oil prices were down during COVID and production and so forth. So oil revenue is down. You also had commercial vessel passenger, the head tax, rental vehicle taxes and so forth, or other sources of revenue loss to the state. Follow-up, Representative Wool, and then I think we've got Representative Ortiz and Representative Rasmussen. Representative Wool?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just one more question. The Alaska Tourism Revitalization, promote tourism, adapt services. Obviously, it looks like, well, we're perhaps losing another cruise ship season. So a lot of businesses are going to have a major impact. Even if you advertise all over the world, I think certain communities are going to be hit very hard. Is some of this money just direct to business to sort of keep them afloat, like the next category would be, or is it simply to promote and adapt? Is some of it just to say, hey, we don't want you to close this year, here's some money to keep you going until next year?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, one thing here, that we haven't allocated specific programs underneath any of these categories. Really, at this stage, we're just trying to lay out sort of a framework to think about how we're spending the money. And as we get more guidance, we can sort of work on specific programs that could benefit, you know, any of these sectors. In tourism, Alaska Tourism Revitalization, you do have both the impacted communities in our communities that their revenue is pretty dependent on tourism, but then also those businesses. And part of that, you know, is promotion to get, you know, a different type of tourist to come in if we don't have cruise ship season, to try and promote that as much as we can. But, you know, that's not going to replace all of that loss in economic activity. But we do need to have, yeah, some kind of balance in the programs that come in under this. And we are working to develop plans that would fit in each of these categories, to be able to share with the legislature and make some decisions on which ones to move forward. But, you know, it's a little early in the level of guidance we have to kind of put specifics out publicly, especially if those guidances can change.
Got Representative Ortiz, Rasmussen, and then Josephson. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've heard quite a bit from my constituent, from my communities that I represent, about the need for the hope that ARP funding would be able to do some significant revenue replacement for municipalities. Would that potentially fall under any of these categories, economic recovery, innovation, $325 million, if we were to go with something like that? Could some of those, that $325 million, go towards revenue replacement for municipalities?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, you know, it certainly could. That's allowable within the guidance as we understand it. And, you know, tourism revitalization, some of that will be impacted communities, could fit within there, could fit within economic recovery generally. And to an extent, it could also fit within infrastructure investment, since there are definitely communities more in need of water and sewer than other communities.
Representative Ortiz.
Has the administration come out with any statement as to how they feel in general about using the $1.09 billion? Have they come out with any statement as to how they feel about using those resources for revenue replacement for municipalities? Is that something that they see as legitimate, or would they get behind something like that?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I don't know if I can, you know, speculate without specifics on how the program was set up, but at this stage, we're kind of at this, you know, 30,000 foot view of, you know, just wanting to set down priorities and find a balance in these priorities. So it's, we're definitely in the kind of no bad ideas phase of this, I think I would say. So if there is specifics on a proposal in that nature, it would be interesting to kind of talk through those details.
Follow up.
And this may even getting further down the road, perhaps, but is there a vision for the mechanics of how the distribution would take place if there was, for example, if we were going to move forward with $325 million in economic recovery and innovation? Does that happen through grants coming from agencies in the state of Alaska? What's the mechanics of it?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, with economic recovery and innovation, you know, the last go-round, we ran that the Alaska Cares program, which was direct grants. I think this go-round, we might run it a little bit differently, just kind of lessons learned from operating that program. And the need has changed a little bit. So until we get more detail on how the federal government, you know, how they're kind of doing their lessons learned from the last go-round, it's hard to set specific mechanics. But in terms of relief to businesses and organizations, it probably would come in the form of some grant. The requirements of that grant are kind of, are still, you know, needing to be worked out how we would best fit that to, you know, whether it's various sectors or more general.
Thank you.
And while we're on the subject of local governments, and I'm just going off of memory here, but I think under ARPA, the local governments will receive around, I think it was $185 million, but even after that money is received, they're still going to come up short in terms of lost revenue, something to the tune of like $130 $35 million. And so we as the state can come in and help to backfill some of that in terms of, for example, cruise ship head tax. I think the total loss was something like $48 million. The amount that goes to the local communities was like $38 million or something like that. We can, with the amount that the state gets, we can choose to apportion some of that to help the local communities. If I have any of that correct or incorrect, please correct me. Otherwise, I'll go to the next.
That is correct. And one thing I'll note is that $185 million, or really $230 million when you add a municipality of Anchorage, a lot of that was based on population, which, as I think we're all aware, doesn't scale perfectly to the lost revenue in those communities.
Okay, thank you. Representative Rasmussen and then Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious, under either economic recovery or the Build Alaska, we heard a presentation from Mira Kohler with Alaska Village Electric Co-op last week, and she had suggested possibly $5 or $10 million in an appropriation to basically do kind of an energy study and look at a more large-scale energy project, which hasn't been done either for a very long time from my memory or ever. Would a project like that, an appropriation like that, fall under one of those two categories possibly?
Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, it certainly could fall under, you know, economic recovery, infrastructure investment, or even in some ways the protecting Alaskans category, simply because, you know, the affordability and security of our electrical infrastructure is, you know, a protection of individuals, you know, at its root as well. And to that end, you know, these categories, there's a lot of overlap between what can fit into each of these categories, and kind of they're a little bit loosely defined as well. So a lot of different ideas can fit into different spots.
Follow up?
So would you think that it's a reasonable assumption for us to base, you know, moving forward and trying to kind of determine the path forward for, I guess, how we use this money? There was a memo put out in December 16, 2020, from the acting director for Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and it pretty much followed the essential worker guidance that was also issued in August of 2020, and it does give very detailed information as far as essential workers, based on the experience that you guys have had with the federal government over the last year. Would you think that it's likely that at least some of these categories would be included in there, or what can you tell us about that?
Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, not being familiar with the memo, I'm not sure. I could speculate as to how that will tie to the federal guidance, but I'm assuming you said it came from a federal agency. It may well be similar, but I don't know that I can speculate as to what the Treasury will do.
Sure. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you. It's noted in the first paragraph that the current version of this guidance, version 4.0, was released in August 2020. This guidance is intended to help state, local, tribal, and territorial officials and organizations protect their workers and communities and ensure the continued safe and secure operation of critical infrastructure. It can also be used to begin planning and preparing for the allocation of scarce resources used to protect essential workers against COVID-19. I just wasn't sure if that may be kind of a good starting point for us to look at, because it's a pretty, like, 23 pages with essential workers, and I wasn't sure if, based on your experience the last year, that it may be a good starting point for us.
And, okay, Representative Josephson.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Steininger, the categories here on slide 7 are, these are the state's own subcategories, is that right? This isn't like in the CARES Act, there was the small business relief, and there was the payment protection plan and the EIDU or whatever it was. And those were strongly recommended tranches. But this is basically your creation, is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, this is a product of the state looking at, you know, how do we organize our use of this money? How do we kind of frame how we kind of wrangle all the various ideas coming from a lot of various stakeholders in terms of suggestions on how to use $1 billion, and try to organize them into tranches to sort of help with the evaluation of those ideas and help with the prioritization of how we use this money to the maximum benefit of the state.
Mr. Steiner, my second question, and I don't mean this to sound pejorative, but the administration has a reputation, and maybe a good one, for finding every available opportunity to cut general fund spending. And you've done some of that in the FY22 budget by fighting, for example, paying oil tax credits with $80 and that sort of thing. Here, there's an opportunity, as you said, we could offset 8 or 9 times more than this slide and free up general fund for the future. And instead, the administration's approach is to look, and again, not knocking this necessarily, to look not at the state as an institution, but the state as 730,000 Alaskans. And to, I mean, I look at this as perhaps less selfish for the state as a government and more beneficial to the people. Is that sort of the administration's perspective on how to spend this $1.1 billion?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that is a fairly fair way to characterize how we've put these initial allocations out. There is that balance between the state as an institution and the opportunity this provides us to retain money in the Constitutional Budget Reserve and in the general fund, but also that responsibility to care for the 700 and some odd thousand Alaskans. And so we're trying to strike that balance in the use of this money. That finding that balance is going to be the result of the conversation with the legislature as well. We're not married to this allocation. Maybe a balance where more money gets just retained in the general fund to reduce general fund expenditures, that may be a good idea as well. The one thing that we do certainly want to avoid, though, is allowing this sort of windfall, if you will, to sort of hide the structural problems that we have in the state budget. So leaning towards, even if we go with the full $1 billion of available offset, it's very important that we don't do that with the intent of delaying the other fiscal situations that we're in. And so we have chosen a bit more of a balance towards assisting the Alaskans that have also been impacted by COVID and not just the state government.
I it's a good segue to where I was going to go, and that is that even though this proposal would offset less than the legislature may be inclined to do, and help others with immediate needs, we've been stymied other than POMV at advancing the fiscal plan for years. And so given that there's no tolerance for it or willingness to sort of reach agreement on a fiscal plan, I mean, one concern is that even though the state could husband and hold on to that $1 billion and use it to offset fully, that also has benefit in that it forestalls the imposition on the public at some later year. Does that make sense? Through the form of taxation or smaller dividends or whatever. So there's that element as well.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, you're right in that it's definitely not a kind of cut and dry, one way or the other situation. While it has been a long road, trying to work towards a sustainable fiscal plan, I really want to avoid this $1 billion being something that delays it further.
Me too. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, co-chair, and through the co-chair. Just a couple questions. So under item, under page five, or I guess I should do page six, item B. Will the correctional officers be available for considered essential work to for eligible for the funding from that item?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, well, we don't have the exact definition from the Treasury. I will say correctional officers were a presumptively eligible class of state employees for offset of salary costs under the CARES Act. So my assumption is that since they were sort of considered essential under the CARES Act, they likely would be under ARP as well.
Follow-up?
So then you would anticipate money's going to Department of Corrections under this the ARPA plan?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, it would be an eligible cost. We have not proposed to make any appropriations towards Section B here for premium pay. That's not part of the plan that we've laid out, but we also haven't gotten that specific in that plan. So there is no proposal currently to provide premium pay to state workers.
So even though they were eligible under the CARES Act, was it distributed to Department of Corrections?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, we did utilize CARES Act dollars to cover payroll costs for state troopers, who are another presumptively eligible class of employee. However, that was simply to offset general fund expenditures. There was no additional pay given to those employees. It was simply the way that we finance their salaries, kind of entirely back end.
So my understanding is that you didn't really do much with the CARES Act for the correctional, for Department of Corrections.
Ms. Harper?
Again, Paloma Harper for the record. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, we did. We offset their fiscal year 2021 expenses for the allocation that is population management. And so that includes our correctional officer salaries. Again, it's strictly offsetting the general fund expenses on those costs. The difference is that CARES Act could offset the salary and benefits that we normally pay those employees. So we did that to free up the unrestricted general funds. The difference with B is we would have to set up a program to pay those employees more, and then ARP could reimburse us that cost. And we have not, at this point, developed that as a proposal.
So there wasn't any additional pay to the correctional officers that would fall under item B?
No.
Okay. So then on another question, there was $50 million under the CARES Act for nonprofits. And maybe we haven't gotten to that level of detail, but I mean, do you know of any set aside or portion under this plan that you've set aside for nonprofits?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, we don't have any specific nonprofit relief that we've proposed within the fiscal relief funds, state funding categories, but they would fall under the economic recovery and innovation section within that relief to businesses and organizations impacted by the pandemic would be where, you know, that type of program would fall.
And then just one more question, just a complete, again, another subject, but I know the governor's talked about food security a number of times, and I was wondering if in as you've been going through this, where would you see that fall under, if you see it fall under any place here on this, in this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, we've been actually collecting from departments different ideas around the concept of food security that would fall under the Protecting Alaskans category. We don't have any specifics to release at this stage because, you know, we're still trying to determine, you know, how to tailor a program that would fit within the guidelines. But that's certainly an interest of the administration, is looking at food security.
Just along the lines of what Representative Josephson was referring to in terms of our fiscal challenges, and speaking from just a very 30,000-foot level and with very broad brush, is it safe to say that the governor's budget regarding ARPA funds, it doesn't increase the budget? Like, it's not, like, for example, if the Department of Correction has an annual budget of $100 million, you're not adding, you're not wanting, what we're trying to do is we're trying to replace UGF with ARPA funds in places where we were affected by COVID. But so for example, the $100 million annual budget, just hypothetically, you might be using $10 million of that, replacing it with ARPA. And so you haven't increased the budget to $110 million. It's still a $100 million budget. It's just that you're now using less UGF, or maybe the annual budget went up a little bit because you spent a little more on you know, vaccinations for inmates and so forth, and physical care and so forth. But I think just overall, your goal was not to increase the budget. Would that be a safe assumption?
Chair Foster, that is, and actually, I believe the next slide goes into a little bit of detail on mechanically how we're looking to offset general funds. But just generally speaking, with this money, since it is one-time money, we don't want to use it to generate programs that would generate an ongoing obligation for the state. You know, there needs to be a clarity that when this money is deployed, it is a, you know, a short-term relief. It is not, you know, generating new programs that the state then has to come in and increase their operating budget at a later date to cover. So it's very important that these be directed towards one-time or short-duration projects. But the mechanics of that general fund offset, thank you. So in the bill itself, when you look at Section 1, Section 1F and I are two related sections in the bill. One is a $120 million unallocated federal increment, and the other is a corresponding unallocated decrement of $120 million. And so what that does is, as we find areas in the operating budget where we can offset general fund expenditures, we would reduce their general fund budget but increase their federal funds budget in order to compensate. So net zero change. And those two unallocates would have to be allocated in the same place to ensure, you know, there's no net change to those budgets and we're not increasing a budget with this CARES Act money or this ARP money. The other piece is Section FG is a remainder of that $139 million. As has been mentioned a couple of times this afternoon, cruise ship head tax collections dramatically decreased as a result of COVID, down to effectively $0. So there are other funds like that in the state budget that have created significant holes due to low collections that are not unrestricted general funds. So we've set aside $19 million of that general fund offset to be more directed towards revenue collections for designated general fund sources or other restricted revenue sources, with priority given to areas where there's going to be significant impacts to programs if we can't backfill that revenue. And then if I can continue actually with this slide real quick, there's one other section in the bill that is a little, you know, kind of a non-standard section that's, you know, a little different than you might see in most appropriation bills. And what it is since we know that the guidance that we get from the Treasury will come in very late in the appropriation process, and we may not have full understanding of what it means even very quickly after it's released, there will be a little bit of uncertainty in how we allocate this money. And, you know, the desire is to have specific appropriations in the final appropriation bill of, you know, what allocations and programs to use ARP money on. But that means the more specific that we are and the more, you know, guidance the legislature gives the executive branch in how to deploy this money, you know, the more we're tying our hands if that guidance changes. And so we included a section in the bill that would effectively utilize that general fund offset concept to ensure that an appropriation, if found unallowable by the federal government, could be, you know, fulfilled using general fund dollars, but those general fund dollars would then be backfilled with ARP federal dollars, effectively a, you know, net zero on the state's bottom line, but ensuring that we don't get into compliance issues with the feds. And it is a little bit of a non-standard language item, so if there's, you know, specific questions as you read and digest it, you can please feel free to, you know, reach out and ask.
Representative Wold and Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Could you have used on the F&I section at the top, could you have used FY22 instead of FY21? And if so, why are you going back to FY21 budget to use ARP funds for?
Through the chair, Representative Wool. So our understanding right now is we can use ARP funding on an expenditure that occurred after March 3rd. And as we discussed a little bit earlier, we think there's more opportunity for general fund offset per our current understanding in fiscal year 21 than in 22. And that's why we've kind of focused it on 21. If that general fund offset dollar amount grew, if the decision is to lean more in the direction of general fund offset, we would probably have to reevaluate which fiscal year it was put in and maybe spread it across two instead of one fiscal year.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So is that based on the lost oil revenue from that particular year? And you're shaking your head yes, but it's $120 million and the lost revenue is $700 in 19 and $420, so it seems like there's a lot of latitude. And also you'd think that if you incurred that loss, since ARP funds are just coming out now, or we haven't gotten them yet, guidance is coming out on May 10th, you'd think that it would be allowable to use them in FY22, since for a lot of states that's the budget, like ours, is working on right now, and it wouldn't have to be put backwards, but it just sort of seems interesting, I guess, but I don't know if you have a response to that. But
through the chair, Representative Wool, it certainly could be, you know, the effective date on that appropriation certainly could be fiscal year 22 as well, especially at the $120 million amount. But then we do get into that risk of if revenues increase substantially in fiscal year 22, we may not be able to offset nearly as much general fund expenditure in that year.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Steininger, page 2, the subsections D, E, and F, they strike me as very ambiguous. And in total, they add up to a goodly part of the $1.1 billion. I'm going to assume these are just sort of placeholders because, like the legislature, you're trying to figure out what ARPA affords us. But can you appreciate that my reading of this is essentially the administration saying, just appropriate and we'll decide?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, these are especially C, D, and E, and for that matter, A as well under Section 1, really are placeholders. We've put them forward simply as placeholders, kind of lay out these tranches of funding, these buckets of money, in order to kind of start that discussion. We anticipate that the legislature will pass appropriations that are much more specific and tailored towards the programs that, you know, the discussion over the coming weeks kind of hones us in on.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I don't see any other questions, and I think, was that any final comments? I think we're on the last slide. And it looks like we have none, and we have no further questions. So with that, I want to thank you very much for your presentation of the Governor's Bill on the appropriation of the American Rescue Plan Act funds. And if there's nothing else to come before this committee, we will be meeting again tomorrow, Wednesday, April 21st at 9 a.m. And we will be discussing HB 55, which is the Peace Officer and Firefighter Retiree Benefits Bill. And so with that, we will be adjourned. And the time is currently 2:54 p.m. Thank you.